Chicago is one of the most charming cities in North America, I think. And Moody Bible Institute, which is the oldest Bible college in the land, is located in Chicago on LaSalle Boulevard, just near the water. It's stunning. I've had a chance or two to go there, so that's been pretty cool. I am a grad, as you may or may not know. That's why I wear this hoodie as frequently as I do. I'm representing. It's also, I'm not very creative on my wardrobe. So, pardon me, you're going to maybe brace yourself when I go. That's your cue, to brace yourself for a cough impact. We're going to talk about three C's this morning, and they are, and I'm going to get them you to repeat them with me, because I want you to remember these through the course of the week. And the three C's are consume, contribute, and connect. Okay, so with me on three. One, two, three. Consume, contribute, and connect. All right? And before we even get there, I'm going to start this teaching with a video clip that you can queue up. Don't show it yet. And if you can get the lights, that would be great. That, again, Doug, when he's not doing anything at Columbia Bible College, sends me videos. Because he's just sitting around doing nothing, apparently. But this one, he sent me quite a while ago, and I was waiting for the right time to actually share it with you. And this is that morning, and we'll talk about this quite a bit today. This is, to give you some context, I'll tell you that later. Just show us the video.
So discipleship and disciple-making is foundational to any movement. No matter which movement you observe, you will find that they're obsessed pretty much with discipleship and disciple-making. Everyone's a disciple, and no one ever stops being a disciple. And it appears that if we fail at this point, we have to fail everywhere. If we don't disciple, then the culture sure will, and it's doing a good job of it. And so we have to disciple over against the prevailing religious energies and powers of our day, which is, I think, the power of the market to determine our lives. The thing is, we're being profoundly discipled every day by a very sophisticated system called media and advertising. Trillions of dollars are put into it to manipulate our sense of self, who we are, our sense of worth, our identity. This is the task of advertising, is to create desire. It's really about desire. And if religion is anything, it's about desire. So that anyone who comes to Jesus in a Western context is already a well-discipled consumer. And it's a religion. Consumerism is being defined by what we consume. It is the, like I said, the search for meaning, identity, purpose, and belonging tied to the consumption of products. The problem is that I think that consumerism is the alternative religion of our day. Without doubt, is the secular religion of our day. There's no such religious force in the West as powerful as consumerism. For me, the most simplest definition, I think one that gets to the core of what discipleship's about, is becoming more and more like Jesus, like the one I love. The way we worship Jesus is by obeying him. He calls us for utter obedience. Because in the Hebrew mind, the way you worship is to obey. It's not simply giving words. It's actually becoming like. In a sense, my becoming like Jesus is what I'm designed eternally to be like. When we shall see him, we shall be like him. Look what the early church does. They grow like wildfire. Because they got disciples, not consumers. You cannot build a church on consumers. They will desert you at the moment's notice because they have no commitments beyond their own needs. You can't build on that. Jesus is quite wise in this. You can take his advice quite seriously. Quite literally, die. Jesus can take 12 and by extension the 70 and build a movement that changes the world on disciples. He could never have done that on consumers. You've got people who are willing to pay the price. They've already died to their own agendas. They're now living for the Lordship of Jesus. With that, you can build movements.
That was a little muddy, the sound, eh? Am I on? What have I done? Hi, am I there? Okay. That seemed a little muddy. I will recap a bit of it, but to give some context, back context to Alan Hirsch is a missiologist, an author. Oh, Even better. Hi. So Alan Hirsch is an author, a missiologist, and a founder of a number of movements relating to missional church. He's an Australian, as you might have gathered from his accent. And he's an insightful guy. I found that video quite helpful in my own thinking around discipleship. It actually was a bit of a smelling salts for me, in the sense that I like to consume and I don't tend towards contribute sometimes, but both are critical, and that's why we're talking about it this morning. Disciple, and that's what the series is called, Disciples, real simple, is a follower and a learner. The question that Mr. Hirsch seems to imply in this video clip is, what or who do we follow, and what are we learning? And then I would only add, and how is that trending? I'm inclined to agree with him that the market creates desire through media and then more or less impacts our consumption of products. For instance, more often than not, I wear Nike shoes. Is it because I want to be like Mike? Is it because I want to be like the cool kids? Is it status? Am I concerned about what people think of me by what I wear? I don't think so. I mean, look at me. I'm not dressing to impress anybody. I'm just trying to be myself. And Nike seems to fit better than most. It just isn't a nice byproduct that they're pretty cool shoes, too. But I am that guy who is a new product consumer, not all the time, but often enough that it proves Mr. Hirsch's point about media manipulation. It's new. It's flashy. I need to try that. This said, I was at Save On Foods this past week when I noticed a new product on the shelf from Hershey's Chocolate. Couldn't believe it. In one canister, I don't know how they do this stuff, there were peanuts, pretzels, peanut butter cups, and Reese's Pieces all mixed together. It was packaged in this colorful, and I would say, somewhat seductive plastic container. But I want to tell you, my friends, I was strong. I said no to that siren call of salty, sweet goodness. I refused to let the market shape my desire. I would not be manipulated into buying something that I did not need and was way too expensive. And that was mostly why. I mean, not even 500 grams of this kind of goodness for like $5.97? What? It's crazy. Let me ask you, what are we doing to shape our desire to be more like Jesus? And what are we consuming that will compete against the very strong voice of the market? There were key words that came up in that video clip, and I'll describe them here. What if we let Jesus and his church, that is us, shape our meaning, our identity, our purpose, and our belonging, instead of letting the marketplace do that? What might that look like? I can tell you what it looks like for me, though not all the time, but hopefully trending towards more often than not. My relationship with Jesus gives meaning to my suffering and reason for my joy. My relationship with Jesus gives me identity. I'm a Christian, or little Christ, a disciple of the one who loved me so much that he died for me. My relationship with Jesus gives purpose to my life, and it's really simple. As Alan said, to become more like him. My relationship with Jesus defines my belonging. And how is that? As a child of God, as a son of the King, as a member of a family of faith, his church. Specifically, it looks like me absorbing and learning from criticism instead of me defending myself against it, because Jesus has something to teach me in it. That might be suffering for some. If we pause to learn, it might not be, though. We could redeem it. It looks like me laughing at myself with my daughter because there is joy in laughter. It looks like me apologizing this week to someone whom I thought I had offended because the way of Jesus Christ, the way of a Christian, who I am, my identity, is to seek and to ask and to offer forgiveness. It looks like me adjusting the tone of my voice to be more gentle in a conversation, when more gentle is what is needed. Because the Spirit of Jesus, in part, is gentleness. And I want to become more and more gentle because I want to become more and more like Him, and that gives my life purpose. It looks like me praying for my sister in Christ this week who had a very tough Friday. Because I belong in a family of faith. Isn't this way better to define ourselves this way than by letting Nike or Hershey's give our lives such meaning? Of course, right? So let's strap on the faith feed bag. Let's consume in such ways that will meet our desire to be like Christ. Let's compete our eat against the strong voice of the market. I'm going to give you a second to turn to your neighbor and briefly share what might be one of your favorite ways to consume Christ, if I can put it that way, to fill and refill your faith in Jesus. And then if you're willing, and maybe one or two voices might want to share, this is how I best connect with Him. Just turn to each other and share that for a second. I hope that even just doing that for a minute or so catalyzes and encourages you to consume. I am taking what he's talking about in terms of consumption, and I'm turning it positively towards, instead of consuming marketplace product and value, what are we doing to consume Christ in terms of desiring Him more? Any thoughts? What's something that you do that might, I had never thought of doing that, that might catalyze something for us? Anybody? If there's anybody, we'll take the mic, yeah. We're shy. It's okay. I'm going to tell you how that worked. Okay, Christopher. Thank you.
Well, for me, I love the quiet time in front of the fireplace in the mornings, especially the weekends when everyone's still in bed. I love to just spend an hour, just light the fireplace up, and sometimes it's open devotion, sometimes it's just closed book, close my eyes, and just open myself to God and say, here you go. If you have something to say, now is the time I'm ready to. My ears are open. So, and more often than not, I hear something. So.
Yeah, that's
but it's,
cool.
It's a good quality for myself, anyways.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah. Yeah, you have to carve it out sometimes. Do you get up pretty early? When do you get up? 7:30. That's not bad. So just a quiet time in front of the fireplace, reading the word, or just praying. All right. Yeah, Kevin, over here. Oh, no. Oh, there's no rush. We want to hear what you have to say.
Every once in a while, I like to check out Bible apps. And so yesterday, I was listening to Revelations. So just through one of the Bible apps, and it makes it come alive.
Yeah, so it's a Bible that's being read to you, right, instead of you having to read it. That is pretty cool. I like that. Anybody else? No pressure, but we've had somebody from that section and that section. This is looking pretty lean in here. But we have Corey. Oh, here he goes. Yeah, okay, Corey, thank you. Beautiful, nice so, adaptation.
Just trying to help out, you know.
Nice.
People watch.
People watch. Tell me about
sometimes
that.
Sometimes I just, when I'm on my walks for work or whatever, or even not. Sometimes when you just sit down on a bench or whatever, take all electronic devices and put them away, and just watch as people are walking by, and you'll see things, pick up little conversations, and even pray for those people.
Yeah.
And whatever is going on in their life. Not something that you know necessarily, but you can always tell. Like when couples kind of separate in the walk, as a guy said something you shouldn't have said, or those kind of things.
Pray I don't know man. About that.
Yeah, it never happened to me personally, but I've seen it.
Right.
Yeah.
That's the only way I'd know it, too.
It's weird, eh?
So thanks. Actually, that's true. Have you ever done that? Just people watched and wondered what burdens people are carrying and maybe just pray for them at that time? You never know, right? You can see it in their body language or in their nonverbals on the face. Susan?
I'm not sure how many know, but I live next door to Ruth and Ami, so
right.
Every so often, I like on a nice day or even a day today, like today, I'll just open my windows and doors and blast my Christian music and show everybody else around me that's just passing by that happens to be in the area that,
yeah.
Hey, God's here too.
So you're worshiping, but you're also evangelizing. That's awesome. Beautiful. Love it. I love to read, as you might guess, being a pastor. I love to read. I know it's not for everyone, certainly, and it's certainly one person short of a very good conversation. But reading is otherwise, I think, like sitting down with someone who's taken the time to think something through and to put it down on paper. Reading books about Jesus or discipleship is like joining a very big family conversation that's been going on for more than two millennia. There's a lot to learn. And it's the arrogance of chronology to think that we don't have anything to learn from our forefathers. For instance, I just finished reading a book by a 70-year-old Franciscan priest named Richard Rohr. He's helping me understand that there are two halves to life. I'm 50 now, so this book actually means something to me, I think. A first half to build the container of our identity, and a second half of life to fill it properly. In both halves, however, he says this, which I sort of take as his definition of disciple. And I think there's maybe a slide corresponding. All we can give back and all God wants from any of us is to humbly, and I thought this was a neat juxtaposition, humbly and proudly return the product that we have been given, which is ourselves, entirely. Mr. Hirsch used the word die. And specifically he said this, die to our own agendas and live under the leadership of Jesus Christ. But before he said that, he said this, and you may have missed it again because it was a little muddy. You cannot build a church on consumers. They will desert you, and he did this at a moment's notice, because they have no commitments beyond their own needs. Jesus builds a movement that changes the world and still changes the world. He could never have done that with consumers. He needed committed disciples. So we cannot stay there and just consume and just open our doors with the music blaring or just sit quietly in front of the fireside. That is where it starts. We need to contribute. We need to contribute to be committed, to be disciples of Christ's worldwide movement. But before I go on to talk about that, contributing, what it might look like, I'd like to share this caveat, taken from a conversation I actually had with Jackie on this subject. Sometimes there are seasons in our lives when we need to mostly consume. For instance, when we have moved from one faith community to another, it's been a long-time practice of our church, actually, to not ask people to get involved in ministry leadership right away at Crossroads, but rather that they take some time to consume enough of Crossroads to get a sense of who we are and whether or not they think we would be a good fit for each other. Because false starts aren't really helpful for anybody. So consume. If you're new here, we give you around 6 months to do that. Another example is when someone has suffered a deep emotional or spiritual wound of some sort. They just need time to heal. To consume the spiritual medicine of community care and teaching and worship. They need a time to mend before they can contribute to the body of Christ in a healthy and meaningful way. Another example would be when someone feels burnt out by ministry. Someone who has led a ministry for so long, they can't remember when they weren't leading it, and at no points in that long stretch of leading did they take strategic Sabbath rest from that. They are tired of leading, and they've lost their joy in doing so. They need a break, and we ought to give it to them. And yet, we need to be careful that a break doesn't become a habit. We need, and the church needs us, to contribute meaningfully to the ministries of the church when we are able to do so. If I can use a physical metaphor to express a spiritual reality, we need to work off what we consume. It's not an either or, it's an and both. The Apostle James said it this way, faith without action is dead. Let's take a look then at Romans chapter 12, verses 6, 7, and 8. Rick, if I could get that passage up there. There it is. We have different gifts according to the grace given us. If a man's gift is prophesying, let him use it in proportion to his faith. If it is serving, let him serve. If it is teaching, let him teach. If it is encouraging, let him encourage. If it is contributing to the needs of others, let him give generously. If it is leadership, let him govern diligently. If it is showing mercy, let him do it cheerfully. I'll just let you soak in that for a second. Can you go back to the former slide for me for a second, please? Perfect. Let's start there. So a couple of basic comprehension questions I'll ask you, and you can just yell out your responses. Taking what we just have read there in terms of how we are gifted differently. First question, is everyone gifted the same? And it's a yes or no, and on three, one, two, three. Correct. We're not all gifted the same way. What makes them different? We have different gifts according to the... Okay, so what makes them different? We might even say who. Any thoughts? Jesus is a good answer. It's always a good answer. Yeah. And you're mostly right. But in the context of this verse, grace is what makes the difference. Grace coming from the Spirit of God who gives those gifts. If we have a certain gift, what are we supposed to do with it? There is only one correct answer here. It's not necessarily specifically said so here, but I'll let you shout it out in your version on the count of three. What are you supposed to do with a gift that God gives you? One, two, three. We are on the same page. I knew we would be. That's correct. God has given each of us special gifts of grace to meet the needs of the body of Christ. In Greek, these gifts are called charismata, from which we get the word... Say it again? Correct. Charisma. As if to say that when we use these gifts that God has given us, we demonstrate, and I love this definition of charisma from Webster's, magnetic charm, the magnetic charm of God in our lives and its attraction to others. So imagine we display God's charisma when we use the gifts he's given us. It's pretty cool, actually. Again, it's win-win. Good for us when we use them, but good for others to be blessed by them. Our gifts, properly understood and then used, draw us and others to God. To set ourselves up for the application of this text that we just have up here now, I'm going to ask you to think of these gifts, and I'll identify them. There are seven, basically, in this passage. There's seven of them. I'll ask you to think of them in the context of this question. What you think the world most needs of you, given your giftedness and where you see the needs relating to your gifts. But before we go any further, I'm just going to acknowledge that much of what I'm going to share here was helped along tremendously by Dr. Gordon T. Smith, who is a teacher, a prof, in his book Courage and Calling, who is actually now the president of Ambrose College in Calgary. Good guy. So there's seven gifts given. The first one is this, the prophet. The prophet, in verse 6, sees a profound need for people to live in the truth that they already know. And they challenge people to live consistent with their own confession, convictions, and values. Prophets call us to behavior that is congruent with our words. All of us believe this is important, but prophets see this as the most critical piece of all. I actually think this is why I preach. I don't think I get up here Sunday after Sunday and offer us something completely new, like information we've never heard of before, though sometimes that happens, right? But rather, I think my main job, and actually my main burden, is to remind us of the life-changing, life-giving things we already know and act upon them. So what might this look like at Crossroads? I think it can mean preaching and teaching, but I also think it means all of our face-to-face encounters with each other in terms of accountability. The second of these gifts, the servant. Some are servants, verse 7. And I think that's, oh, they're all up there for you. There you go. It's like a cheat sheet. It's good. Tell me, do you know the other seven gifts? Tell me, class. Did I ever tell you that? No, I won't do that. Okay. Servants, it runs in their blood to be attentive to the practical needs around them. They tend to think that there is way too much talk and not enough action. They are often good with their hands, and they are particularly sensitive to what needs to be done. And in fact, they are often at the task and even complete it before the rest of us even recognize that the task needed to be done. All of us need to be attentive to the needs around us. But those who are called servants, it is their most fundamental passion. So what might this look like at Crossroads? Well, it definitely looks like our setup teams. I think it looks like someone like, and I'll mention his name publicly because we never do this. It looks like someone like Gil. Is Gil here this morning? Oh, that's perfect. He'd be embarrassed. Is he? Oh, he is embarrassed. Okay, perfect. That worked out really well then. It's a nice shade of red you're wearing on your face there. It looks like people like Gil who repair and fabricate pieces for moving and storing our Sunday morning equipment. Right? I think it looks like our audiovisual team at the back who do sound and visuals. They make it happen. And I think it could be, you may have seen this slide pre-service, you may have seen the announcement in the bulletin. I think it could be somebody that might be a Freeze It Forward partner. Now, Freeze It Forward is, let's say this way, is a way of branding a ministry that we think can be pretty valuable. We've noticed that folks have different needs throughout the course of the year, and sometimes it's really neat to meet a need and encourage them with a meal. And we've done that pretty well over the course of our time here. But we've also noticed, too, that it can be hard to gather and get that together at a moment's notice because people's lives are pretty busy, right? So our thought was, well, we have a really nice freezer back there. Oh, way to go, big guy. Like, why are you all looking back there? I'm talking to you. Pay attention. Oh, no. So Freeze It Forward is just that. If you, and we'll have it in the bulletin at least monthly, right, to remind you that this is how you can do this. If you're putting a meal together and you're able to put another version of it, or not another version, another helping of it together, another full meal together, we have a freezer at work at the office that you saw earlier. Just package it up, preferably in something that doesn't need to be returned back to you, right, so that we're not trying to chase you down to return it to you. And then we'll store that, and then we'll give that on your behalf when the need arises, okay? We might even call you to say, would you mind taking that? Because I think that's even more personal and perhaps more meaningful. I think it also looks like this servant, when we put together and deliver hampers for the Salvation Army and sort food for the food bank, when we make meals at Cyrus Center and Ruth and Naomi's, when we head south and we build a house in Mexico for a family in need, and when we renovated our new office space. Those are servants. They get to it. Why are we still talking? Are we done? Let's go. The teacher, the third of these. Verse 7, others are called to be teachers. A teacher is convinced that the main problem in this world is a lack of understanding. If they could just understand it, they would know and they would live the truth. Teachers believe that transformation comes through learning. What might this look like at Crossroads? I think it looks like life group leaders, youth leaders, and kids' own teachers, for instance. The fourth gift, the encourager. And I would say I'm a teacher and a prophet, and you will find that these aren't hard categories, but you'll resonate more strongly with one or two than the others. And in the end, that's where I think Jesus is inviting you to contribute. The encourager, still others are inclined to think that the greatest problem in the world is a lack of hope. And their foundational aim is to encourage others. All of us are called to encourage one another, for sure. But the pattern of some reflects a deeply held conviction that encouragement is fundamental for the world to experience peace, justice, and transformation. They see how discouragement is killing us. Some encouragers use words. They are masters of language and speak in ways that inspire, renew the heart, and give courage. Others recognize the significance of place and know that the spaces we live in and we work in can undercut our courage and sense of well-being. They know how to design spaces of nurture, life, and light. I think I actually saw this in Greg's mom, Greg Dirksen's mom, this week at a meeting I had with her relating to the Mexico team auction. She wants to take the blank slate of the chapel at City Life Church and pow, make it vibrant with color for the auction, like Mexico itself, actually. So she had shopped the dollar stores around town to find the right bowls, the right tablecloths, the right craft supplies, and then she pulled out samples of decorations, even had a notebook with pictures of other decorations. I turned to her and I said, what is this? Because I love this stuff. And is excited to bring light and life to an otherwise pretty neutral space at the chapel at City Life. And then some people use words, right? Timely, simple, thank you, good job, I appreciate you. Some write texts or emails to affirm us. And some speak into our lives in ways that inspire. What does this look like at Crossroads? Well, choose your setting, right? I don't think there's a place in any community of faith where an encourager isn't welcome. But here at CCC, it might look like that greeter at the door who folks want to be greeted by. That face in the congregation who encourages whoever is leading up here, right? I didn't mention it last week when we talked about the worship survey. We talked about affect. There's an affect that comes this way to you. There's also one that comes from you to us. And the encourager is someone out there that looks like this. When the leader pans and finds them, they know they have found them because they're usually doing something like this. And they're leaning in, and they're grateful, and they look like they're actually paying attention, and they're engaged, and their body affect is that. Their eyes are dancing, they're locked, they're right there. What was I talking about, guys? I'm barely paying attention to myself. Ha! That did not illustrate the point. Okay, so let's go to The Giver. Yeah, it's a good movie, too. but it's one of the gifts. So gift number 5, I think. The giver, givers contribute to the needs of others. That's really basic. Verse 8, it says so in the verse. They recognize that without funding much that is important, it just won't happen. They are as often as not people who know how to make money, but also how to give it away generously. All of us are called to give generously, but some have the unique ability and the vision to both make money, but also to give it away. What might this look like at Crossroads? I think it looks like folks who, over the course of the years, for instance, have just paid for something because it's what was needed. Whether they were receipted for it or not, they had a vision for it because the vision was explained, and it happened. It looks like a whole bunch of folks who donated materials for our office renovation, lumber for framing, electrical wiring, the T-bar, the ceiling tiles, all of it donated for people who know how to make money and who gave generously. And I think that this generous spirit is actually quite evident at Crossroads in support of our hospital chaplain, Jim Gates, which we do every year, in support of Chilliwack Community Services to feed moms and kids in life skills and literacy programs, in support of the Community Cupboard, which is run out of Chilliwack Middle School, when we bring in clothing and food, and when we gave gift cards and hoodies in support of Chris and Debbie Visser, who did the Christmas meal for staff and students at Cyberside. I think it's partly a body thing, too. The next gift, the leader, number 6. The leader, there are then some who are leaders in verse 8. There's so much talk of leadership these days that sometimes we miss the point of a text like this, thinking that everyone is called to leadership. Like all of these orientations, we are all called to lead as required, situationally, but it's the unique passion of some through, I would say, the gifts of administration and management to help others fulfill their giftedness. Those in leadership are servants of a different kind, bringing together the gifts of others to enable them to achieve something greater than the sum of the parts. They help us see the big picture and help us work together to fulfill our mission in a way that reflects the fundamental values we hold together. What might this look like at Crossroads? I think it looks like our staff and our leadership team, but I also think that it looks like anybody who is mindful to help explore and flourish in their gifts someone else. Like a life group leader who enables others to lead. Like a youth group leader who trains and entrusts a piece of ministry to a student. Like a kid's own teacher who asks a child to read or pray or show something to the class. It looks like anyone using their gifts of administration and management to help out. For instance, on the connections team, where we would invite you, if you have those gifts of managing and administrating, to help us out. We'd love to hear from you. It certainly looks like those who lead in worship every Sunday morning, choosing songs, managing a team, and then it looks like our musicians and our vocalists managing us and inviting us into worshiping. The last of these gifts that we see in Romans chapter 8 is the one who shows mercy. Paul speaks of those who are called to demonstrate mercy. Verse 8, here again, while all of us are called to show mercy, these folks believe that the central need of those around them is for others to stand with them, to mourn with those who mourn and to weep with those who weep. While some of us may wonder how this solves problems and brings resolution to issues before us, those who are called to show mercy recognize the transforming power of empathic identification. They know that the demonstration of mercy is itself life and strength to another. Remember that Brené Brown video I showed you a while back? It was a short video clip, an animated deal. She spoke over it. There was a fox and a bear. It was about empathy. She talked about empathy as being when we take someone else's perspective, when we are non-judgmental in doing so, when we recognize another's emotions and validate them, and when we communicate through those emotions without silver lining it. Oh, it'll get better. Like encouragement, where does empathy get old? Who doesn't want someone to empathize with them? Who doesn't want someone to stand with them? What might this look like at Crossroads? I hope mercy, the desire to stand with people and to empathize with them, is what motivates much of what I said we might do as servants, hoping that the right heart will lead us to the right action. But I also think, like the prophet and the encourager, much of this ministry is done spontaneously and face-to-face when we hear a person's story and we empathize with them, when we see their disheartened face and we just hold them, when we cry with folks because they're crying. There is no ministry sign-up sheet today. It isn't that kind of teaching. There's just this teaching and these three questions for you to think through and pray through and respond to. And these three questions will help us figure out how we might use our gifts in service of the church. Firstly, what do I like to do? What do I like to do? I think that's how we're wired. God will invite us to do things in service of Him that we are inclined to do because we like doing them. Start there. What do I like to do? I don't like to sing, so don't volunteer for the worship team. Please. Do others see in me the gifts that I think I have? This can be sobering when I think I am gifted. No. You're not. In that area. Maybe something else. You should probably know your gifts by virtue of people saying to you at some time or another, I could totally, you're an encourager. That personifies you. When I turn to you, I know that I'm going to be encouraged. So that might be it. You'll hear it from people. And then the proof really is in, do you see consistent spiritual gains in the lives of others as you serve using that gift? So if you are an encourager, do you see people responding to that? Do you see their countenance lift? Do you see them with courage move forward into doing something that they weren't going to do before, for instance? They're very broad categories, aren't they? But I think you can probably find yourself in it. And if in one of them, or two of them, or three of them, and if it doesn't fit in terms of application here and the things that we do already as a church, then let's invent something. We don't need to systematize it or have committees on it. Let's just be who we're called to be, right? Consume and contribute. Together, they will help you with that third C. They will help you connect at Crossroads. But for even greater clarity, here is how you can connect at Crossroads. If you are finding yourself saying, I don't feel like I'm connecting so well at Crossroads, please pay attention. This is how you do it. First, be here on Sunday morning. Worship together with us. We've talked about no, grow, show, and go. This is knowing God. This is basic 101. Come, consume, and connect with each other, shoulder to shoulder. Talk before and during, after the service. Secondly, participate in a life group. No, this is grow, right? This is getting into the word deeper, being known. Thirdly, participate in a ministry of some sort here at the church, whatever it is. Work alongside others. Set up, greeters, worship leading, AV, kids zone teachers, youth leaders, life group leaders, and so on and so on. No, grow. This is show. This is demonstrating your gifts in service of the church. And then go. No, grow, show, go. Participate in one of our partnerships. Cyrus Center, the Community Cupboard, Ruth and Naomi's Mission, Chilliwack Community Services, Fraser Health, One Life, One Chance. There's lots of ways to be involved. Think and pray and get in touch with Aaron or Greg or me. Let's chat about the unique gift or gifts God has given you by his grace so that you can use them to show a little charisma. All right? I'll leave it with you.